It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Farad.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel recently published an analysis of immigration data showing the number of ICE arrests in Wisconsin during the second Trump administration have dramatically increased.
From the latest data available, the Trump administration had arrested and detained over 1,600 immigrants in Wisconsin. That amounts to a 200% increase compared to the last 13 months of the Biden administration.
And according to this data, the number of people in Wisconsin arrested without a criminal record increased sevenfold.
Part of that analysis is based on information from the Deportation Data Project, a group of scholars and lawyers who collect federal immigration enforcement data through public records requests and share it with the public.
An immigration attorney in the Milwaukee area has been reviewing this data for the past 20 years. Devorin Odercheck has represented immigrant clients for more than 100 countries. Dov, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
Yes, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel analysis, it shows immigration arrests way up. Arrests of people without criminal records, once again, also way up. What stands out to you about the data on Wisconsin?
I am not surprised by this data based on a number of major legal developments that occurred last year, in a space of a very short period of time between July and September of last year.
Can you walk us through some of those legal developments that have been so pivotal?
Sure. So on July 4th, Congress passed the One Big Beautiful Bill. I can't believe I'm going to say the BBB, but apparently that's what people say. But at any rate, the BBB allocated $45 billion to ICE detention and $30 billion to ICE operations to add an additional 10,000 ICE officers. So $75 billion over 4 years. That is a dramatic increase in the budget. With respect to ICE detention, that's a 300% increase. So first thing that happened was on July 4th, ICE received a lot of money. The second thing that happened is on July 8th, so 4 days later, coincidentally, the Department of Homeland Security issued an internal memo to its ICE lawyers. ICE lawyers are the folks that represent ICE in immigration court. And this memo instructed the ICE lawyers to argue for the first time that anyone who entered without inspection, that is, anyone who entered without a visa, is jurisdictionally ineligible for a bond, period.
For a bond hearing?
Excuse me?
For a bond hearing?
For an immigration judge to issue a bond. They could ask for a bond, but the immigration judge would have to say, I don't have jurisdiction.
Sure. Okay.
And so that was that memo was quite a dramatic departure from settled law. For literally the past three decades, if not longer, the law has been that if someone who entered without inspection was apprehended by ICE within the interior of the United States, that person would be at least eligible to ask for a bond. It could be denied if they were considered a flight risk or a danger to the community, or if they were subject to mandatory detention if they had certain criminal convictions. But they could at least there was at least jurisdiction for an immigration judge to make that decision. And this memo on July 8th from the Department of Homeland Security said they came up with a new argument that people that enter without inspection should be considered, quote unquote, applicants for admission, and therefore a completely different subsection of the law applied to them. And that was brand new territory.
Okay. So lots more money flowing in for these arrests and detentions, and then a totally different interpretation of immigration law and detention. Do you see because the data does show an increase in arrests in spaces like private homes or courthouses, and previously many arrests, they happened at jails. What do you make of that?
Well, I think part of it has the tactics have shifted. So in the past, The primary tool for ICE would be these ICE detainers. So if someone was arrested locally in the jail, ICE would place a detainer requesting that that local jail keep that person for at least 48 hours for ICE to assume custody of that person before they're otherwise allowed to be released from local custody. And the ICE detainer has been an effective tool for ICE because, you know, from their perspective, it's a lot easier to just go to a jail and have someone being handed over to them by the local police, the jail. So that has been, and I think that still remains an effective tool, but one of the big increases has been the number of warrantless arrests of just going out and about. There has been, I think, a marked increase in ethnic and racial profiling. There was a Supreme Court concurrence or decision, I should say, from last year that unfortunately, I think, has given them the green light to, I think, conduct warrantless sort of stops, which are based on race or ethnicity.
We're talking with Dov Odorchuk. He's an immigration attorney in the Milwaukee area. Dov, you know, Democrats in Congress, they're demanding that ICE agents obtain judicial warrants from judges to be able to enter a person's home. What impact are ICE's administrative warrants having on their ability to make these arrests?
Well, let me just say that well, first of all, let me kind of take a step back here. The administrative warrants is a creature of statute, and the statute is very clear that all that ICE needs to effectuate an immigration arrest only, okay, not a criminal, but immigration only, is essentially a self-executing administrative warrant. If judicial warrants are going to be required for these types of immigration arrests, I know this is not a popular opinion, perhaps, but the statute would have to change. Because, I'm so sorry, but the Supreme Court, it's been settled and it's been pretty clear that immigration law is considered civil only. It's not considered criminal. So a lot of the things that I'm not necessarily saying that the Fourth and Fifth Amendment don't apply in the context of immigration arrests. It's just sort of a different thing. And so, for example, in immigration court, it's very, very difficult to suppress evidence in immigration court, even if that evidence may have been taken in violation of the Fourth Amendment. I'm not saying that's impossible, but it's just we're talking about two different things.
I want to turn our
Compared to.
attention, just I want to jump in here. I want to turn our attention to this Sheboygan Falls woman, Elvira Benitez Suarez, and her case. And you're not her lawyer, but you are familiar with her case. Elvira arrested by ICE at a routine check-in as she sought a green card. How does her case reflect the Trump administration's new interpretation of immigration law, do you think?
Well, it really is a unfortunate, perfect example of it. So, the backdrop in Elvira's case, she took an unfortunate turn into Canada and was turned back, and through essentially a GPS system that, well, just that's just what happened. So she got arrested in July of 2025, shortly after this memo came out that I just mentioned. So my understanding is that she was detained in July and she wasn't given a bond because I believe the immigration judge accepted at that time the ICE's interpretation, that memo that came out on July 8th. Now, I was going to mention in September, the Board of Immigration Appeals came out with a decision that fully adopted ICE's position from that July 8th memo. That decision came out in September, and that affected her as well. So what happened was she was in detention in starting July, all the way up into December. She won her case. She was granted something that's called cancellation of removal, which essentially is like a special green card application in immigration court only for undocumented immigrants. It's very difficult to be granted one of these. And she was granted it. She was released. And during a routine check-in at ICE in March, they decided to re-detain her and send her back to a Kentucky facility. And my understanding is that I believe there's probably been a writ of habeas corpus that may have been filed, because that's really her only recourse at this point, is to get a federal judge to say that she's she should be released.
And of these 1,600 people arrested or detained by ICE from Wisconsin that we understand in this data, you know, where do they go? What is their possible legal recourse? You just mentioned Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's a really good question, because that's one of the other significant changes that has occurred during the past year. In my first 19 years, it would be very rare for a client of mine to be transported from Wisconsin to another facility outside the state. So for the most part, my clients were either detained here in Wisconsin, and back in the day, it was just the Dodge County Jail and the Kenosha Jail. The Kenosha Jail and ICE got into fight during COVID, so that ended. And so it's been principally Dodge and Juneau. But now I've had so many more clients during the past year being transported to other facilities outside the state. Kentucky, Indiana, I've had a client who was sent all the way to New York. It's been about a bit interesting, because I'm now sort of in front of these immigration judges that I've never been before, because my home turf is the Chicago Immigration Court.
Sure. Well, Dov, thank you so much for sharing. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you for having me on your show. Appreciate it.
That is Dov Odercheck, an immigration attorney in the Milwaukee area. We've been talking about the federal immigration enforcement data out on Wisconsin and changes in interpretation of immigration law by the Trump administration.